Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Swing and a high fly ball. That is how you answer a brushback. Second deck home run. Holy cow. Got to use it, Gramps. It's 4-0 Atlanta. There is no residual effect from home run derby other than he knows how to hit him a country mile. That was an absolute cruise missile, his 22nd.
Ronald Acuna's bomb of a home run measured at 455 feet in San Diego last night. Yep, no ill effects of the home run derby. John and Hugh on the morning show, normally Monday through Friday, 6 to 10, but this Saturday, 9 to noon. And we have open phone lines at 404-741-0929. Talk a little college football in this hour, but we're going to begin with the headlines. Last night, the Braves get two home runs from the bringer of rain, Josh Donaldson, and that bomb from Ronald Acuna in a 5-3 win, coupled with another solid outing by Dallas Keuchel. Hugh, I have to say that I am glad I'm not a general manager, because I would have pulled the trigger on Craig Kimbrell and not Dallas Keuchel, and I would have been wrong.
I mean, that's interesting that you would say that. I mean, you probably, you know, a lot of people thought that Kimber would be, you know, that guy. But it was the reason why a lot of people felt that he was out there. Dallas Keuchel as well. But I think that when you listen to some of the reports of Dallas Keuchel, he has been closer to what he was kind of, reported to be, as opposed to a guy like Craig Kimbrell. You know, you knew he was going to come in here, eat up a lot of innings. He has done that so far. And he's not a guy that's going to light up the radar gun. Nobody ever thought that about him. And so you look at the performance that he had last night, and he's kind of fallen into lockstep with what you potentially thought he was going to be.
But Josh Donaldson has certainly had an impact, and he had an impact immediately on the Braves. Even though he wasn't hitting that well early in the season, his defense at third base, I don't think anybody, maybe not even the Braves, expected quite that good a defense from Josh Donaldson. Because even in the early, like the first month and a half or so, of the season when he really wasn't hitting and everybody's kind of going, wait, we paid you $23 million. He was playing stellar gold glove defense, and now he's starting to hit. Here's an addition to Josh Donaldson that has been so critical to the Braves. The next addition, of course, was the elevation of Austin Riley and what he's meant to the Braves. The third addition was the signing of Dallas Keuchel. And then when I asked earlier this point, you may have mentioned, you heard me say that you made two really good points. One of them was about the Braves. And here's the other point that I made. So I just threw out there, I thought, you know, somebody's, because Acuna, somebody, Keuchel, they're going to have to be the guy, you know, now. If the Braves are going to, by the way, forget about winning the East. Let's focus on catching the Dodgers for the number one seed, because the Braves are 6 games ahead of the Nationals, 7.5 ahead of the Phillies, but they're only 4.5 behind the Dodgers. So there's going to have to be somebody that's got to be a guy. So I said to you, you know, who's got to be the guy? And you made a great point. The guy is the next guy, whether it's a guy you go get from, you know, between now and the end of the month in a trade, or whether it's the return of Foldy or Nuke or Gausman, the next guy in that pitching staff to go along with Dallas Keuchel, who has to be the guy. It's a great point.
And I think that's what we're looking at, John, is because, you know, he's going to be the person that we're going to be looking at that's going to come in here and help. If it's a frontline starter, he's going to help, you know, study that frontline. Or if he's going to be in the bullpen, somebody that we can rely on in that bullpen. I think that's what we're looking at right now. It's one of those things where I think presently constructed, a lot of people feel like the Braves are in a great position to make some noise. It's just that one piece that you're potentially missing that's going to come in that could really help steady this thing and really give you hope to think that we could actually win a World Series here this year.
And maybe we've all been missing it. Again, Alex Anthopoulos knows far more about, you know, the potential return to health of Kevin Gausman, the potential return to form of Mike Foltynewicz, or the potential return to health and form of Sean Newcomb. And we just aren't privy to exactly how far along they are. I mean, truly, whether they're ready to return to the team. Take Gausman, for example. Now, I was a little harsh on Kevin Gausman because he was so bad. He had seven really bad starts in a row. Well, it turns out he has plantar fasciitis. Hugh, if you have a problem with your foot and you're a pitcher, that's a serious problem.
Yeah, I mean, you can't – and you look at pitchers, it's all about the base for them and you know, their legs and everything. And if you can't plant and get a good foundation, it makes it kind of hard to pitch. It's just kind of interesting everything happened the way that it did because it had us going – it was a home moment, especially when Dallas Keuchel got here. You look at Gausman going down with the plantar fasciitis, and we thought that that was a basically a ploy to get Keuchel up here earlier. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case. And then you talk about Mike Foltynewicz. And, you know, people talk about how the kid has great stuff, just hasn't been able to figure it out between the ears yet. That's a guy that you really, really was dependent on coming into this season. Has not been the case for you. And you're still dependent on, you know, him to see if he can come back from that. That's the dilemma that the Braves have right now, John, is that you have all this potential at that position, but you're also in a position where you need some guys to step up. And they haven't done it yet, and you need to make a move, or you're thinking you need to make a move, but you got these guys that if they could turn it around at the right time, you might not need to make a move, but it hasn't happened. So you got to figure out if you're going to do something. When can you do it? And who? And when you do it, who are you willing to let go?
And maybe it is both. I mean, maybe it's both. You have
that's a whole lot to digest, though.
No, I understand. But if you're thinking about winning the World Series this year, and please let me be clear here. If you're a Braves fan and you're not thinking about winning the World Series right now, I can't help you. I don't know what you would be thinking about except trying to win the World Series. Because this team, if they do make another really good move, and again, think of the additions I just went through, if they make the right addition from another team, and you get some – I know it's a lot of ifs and buts, but the point of I'm trying to make is you can't make any move without thinking about winning the World Series.
If you make a move, that's what you're making it for, I would think. You're making it to try to win the World Series. And I'll never forget the conversation that we had with Braves upper management. And it was like, you know, they're not turning a blind eye to the fact – they're not turning a blind eye to what the team is doing. But at the same time, you don't want to mortgage your future for, you know, now. But at the same – in the same turn, you have to acknowledge the contribution that the guys on the team are giving you right now. You got a nice little nucleus of guys. And it would be a shame. It would be a travesty if you didn't strike while the iron's hot, so to speak. I mean, it really would be. And it just reminds me of the times where I was with the Philadelphia Eagles, and we knew we needed some receivers. We had some pretty good receivers, no question about that. But we knew we needed an upgrade. And I remember the story that I heard was before T.O. got there, Coach Reed was like, hey, we're pretty good with the guys that we have. And I guess somebody trumped him. Like, you know what, bro? I appreciate your coaching acumen, but we're going to go ahead and get this Terrell Owens. We're going to go ahead and do that. I don't think the conversation went exactly like that. I think it was a whole bunch of – I think BS was the word that was thrown around when he said we got some good guys. And somebody said in the meeting said BS, and they went out and got T.O. And after that, you know, you got over the hump. But sometimes, you know, you got to make moves like that. And if you feel like that's the move – you know, you gotta make it. You gotta go out and make a bold move every now and then.
All right. Some of the other headlines on this Saturday include the fact that Serena Williams was shocked in the women's final at Wimbledon, in the sense that, you know, she lost to somebody who was, to be fair, higher seeded in Simona Halep, but she was beaten soundly 6-2, 6-2 in a match that lasted barely an hour.
I tell you what, though, it's unfortunate that Serena lost, and I'll say it looked like, for whatever reason, she was a little bit off. But for her to sit there and handle it the way that she did, I commend her for that. I mean, that had to be a tough one, you know, especially coming off of last year's loss, the way that she lost that one, to lose again, and to sit there and to know that your reaction is probably going to be more of the story than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to sit there and not give them nothing, I applaud her for that. You know, because I even, at a point during the show, I used the wrong choice of words and, you know, a trigger word, meltdown. And I was thinking, like, that's not fair to say because, you know, for a lot of people, meltdown means something real negative. But for her to go out there and have the matches that she had, she wasn't on top of her game, and then to handle it the way that she did, I commend her for that because she knew that wouldn't have been – the story wouldn't have been her losing. The story would have been the way that she reacted to the loss. And she sat there and she's doing press conferences and she's talking about – she's handling it a lot better than most people probably would in that situation.
And by the way, the men's final for breakfast at Wimbledon tomorrow morning starts at 9 a.m. our time with Djokovic against Federer. Interesting about that matchup between Joker and Roger is that they're both going for their 412th career Grand Slam title. Is there anything more boring than men's tennis? Could we just skip like to the semifinals? Okay, Joker, Federer, Nadal. Is there anybody else? We got somebody wants to play. Okay, then we just skip it right to the. Come on. Wow. All right. Julio Teheran, by the way, on the mound for the Braves late tonight as they play in San Diego, and we'll keep our eyes.
How late you talking? Like 10 something?
Yeah, I think it's 10 something again.
You got the count. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's, you know what it is? It's 8:40 tonight.
Oh, no, I might stay up for that one.
Yeah, they're playing a 5:40 San Diego game.
Give me a little game day cognac, sit back, chill out, do a little bit of that because it's
8:40 today, and then tomorrow at 4:10.
It looks warm outside, too. It looked real warm.
Yeah, I just looked outside. You're right.
It looked real warm. I think I'm gonna do after I get off work today. I'm gonna ride around. I'm gonna follow a couple armored cars around.
You're gonna go to the pool
just to see if I can get lucky. I feel kind of lucky today. I'm not playing the lotto anymore. I'm just gonna follow me a couple armored trucks.
Hey, isn't that the Georgia Lottery ought to do the armored car? They ought to do the armored car. Georgia Lottery, you should, because you see the commercials with the doors flying open and money flying out.
I didn't catch that. I mean, did somebody catch the pictures scratcher. Of the door?
That's a scratcher. Oh, no. You know? All right, anyway.
Yeah, you kind of blew it with that one.
I try. I am just suggesting. It's a marketing thing. Atlanta United against the Seattle Sounders coming up tomorrow. Our coverage begins at 3:15 with Mike Conley and Jason Longshore. The kick at 3:55 live on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. So much going on, including college football. Monday, SEC Media Days begin. And as a primer to that, we spoke with one of the true experts in college football, Brett McMurphy, what he had to say about the SEC and about the big stories of college football, the Heisman and whatnot. Interesting interview. We have it for you, and we're going to play it for you next on this Saturday edition of John and Hugh in the Morning Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Atlanta sports doesn't stop for the weekend.
Heck yeah.
And neither do we.
Keeping you up to date all weekend long.
It's just great.
On the weekends, that's all I listen to, really.
The home for Atlanta sports on the weekends. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Next week, the SEC Media Days in Birmingham. And we'll have Chris Goforth join us on our show on Monday morning live from Birmingham. He's covering the SEC Media Days for us. Going to be fun. It's always a circus, Hugh, to get into the SEC Media Days. Always a lot of fans that do stuff. You see, there are two teams this year, Hugh, that play. We expect Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson in some order. Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, whatever order, to be 1, 2, 3, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think most people think Clemson's probably going to be number one.
Okay, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia. I'll go that. There's two teams, South Carolina and Texas A&M, that play all three of those teams this year. Good
yeah,
luck.
I know Texas A&M and Clemson, they get after it. And basically a lot of people feel like Texas A&M are going to be the sacrificial lamb. But I was looking at the schedule. That's probably the toughest game that they're going to have
for Clemson,
on their schedule this year.
And we talked with college expert Brett McMurphy, and that's exactly how we started the interview. We asked him about the fact that Clemson's schedule is pretty soft outside of that, and is A&M the only team that can beat them?
And that may even be a stretch. they're projected, I think, to be a 2-touchdown favorite against Texas A&M. And I think the next closest may be Syracuse. And, yeah, basically you look at Clemson and Alabama and their schedules, they're going to be double-digit favorites in every game this year. There's seven teams overall that will be, again, projected going into the season. If you lose a game, obviously you won't be favored the rest of the year. But there's seven teams that will be favored in every game. But Clemson and Alabama are double-digit favorites in every game. And that's why you look at the odds of Vegas as far as teams to win the college football playoff or to get the college football playoff, and Clemson and Alabama are the overwhelming favorites. You know, stop me if you've heard this before, but yeah, it looks like we're headed to another Clemson-Alabama matchup, either in the semis or in the final, unless they both stumble. And like you mentioned, Clemson's schedule, I just don't see anywhere where Clemson will struggle at all.
It just it has me as a college football fan literally shaking my head, because this is not supposed to happen. I mean, you have periods, Brett McMurphy, where a couple of teams will dominate. In the 90s, Nebraska and Florida State. In the 80s, Miami, of course, Miami, again, you know, you'll have those runs. Oklahoma had a run. But two teams like this to dominate the entire sport for as many years consecutively as they have is just mind-blowing, really.
You know, you're right. And, you know, it's almost where they've become the Yankees, where people either love them or hate them. But I think, you know, I think it's also, and you're right, you look at the dynasties of the 80s and the 90s and so forth. What makes it even more impressive, especially for Alabama, is you've got the scholarship limitations. You know, everybody's on TV, so you don't have to go to a Nebraska or Miami to get on TV. You can go anywhere, and you're going to get on TV. So all of these recruiting advantages that schools had in the 80s and 90s are gone, and you can only sign 25 kids a year. And the fact that Alabama and Nick Saban have continually been there every year. Dabo Swinney now has got his program up to the point where I know a lot of speculation a few years ago, we probably talked about it before, is when or if Nick Saban ever steps down, will Dabo go back to the alma mater? I don't think he will now, because he's got Clemson on even ground or maybe even above where Alabama is now. And that's just it's a credit to both universities, and the fact that we have, you know, scholarship limitations and all these different factors that should make parity more prevalent. It's exactly the opposite. You're right. They have dominated, and I don't necessarily like that, but there's one way to stop that, guys, and that's for somebody to beat them, and nobody's done that yet.
Speaking of parity and somebody beating Alabama, is this the year that potentially – Georgia, this is a two-part question, by the way. Is this a year potentially Georgia can beat Alabama? And then, you know, if they do that, do they have enough that they could beat Clemson if they meet them in the championship game?
You know, I did back in the spring, I did my, you know, one of the way too early top 25s. I had Clemson number one. I had Georgia number two. I had Alabama number three. And based on Twitter reaction, you thought I ranked Alabama 33. But I'm actually convinced on Georgia. Well, I'm sure they'll go 6-6 and prove me wrong. But now I think this is the year. You know, the fact is that the last 2 years, you know, they could have, should have beat Alabama. They didn't. But I think a big factor for teams playing Alabama is mentally you have to know that you can do it. And I think Georgia is in a really good spot. They returned 15 starters, 11, which were freshmen or sophomores last year. So I think that's going to add a lot to them. I think the loss to Texas in the Sugar Bowl, I think actually will benefit them, because I do think Texas deserved to win. I don't think that was a fluke, but I also think Georgia didn't come in there with the right mindset. You know, they've got 8 starters back on defense that rank 2nd in the SEC in passing defense and total defense. And again, you look at the schedule. They get Notre Dame, toughest non-conference game at home. And in their toughest conference game is Florida in the world's largest cocktail party. So I think this is a great opportunity for Georgia. And I think Alabama, again, Alabama is going to be, as we talked about their schedule, I think Alabama is going to go 12-0, and we'll see what happens in the SEC title game. But I think there might just be a slight regression for Alabama. And again, when you're number one or number two every year, a slight regression means you're going to end up number three. You know, they lost 11 players to the NFL. You know, that's a record high for Alabama. This is the third consecutive year. Alabama have a new offensive and defensive coordinator. So I think the combination of the coaching turnover for Alabama and Georgia actually knowing that they can do it, I think that's why I think Georgia can do it. Well, now, ultimately, we'll have to see if that happens. And unfortunately, we're going to have to wait till December. because we could have both teams undefeated when they meet in Atlanta.
Brent McMurphy, College Football Insider. You can see him at Stadium. That's at Stadium. And, of course, on Twitter as at Brett McMurphy as well, at Brett_McMurphy. Talking college football here, let's expand this out a little bit as we get ahead of the SEC Media Days next week. ACC Media Days coming up, Big Ten as well. In the Big Ten, Michigan, there's some people that just are doubting that Jim Harbaugh is ever going to be able to do this. You have a brand-new coach and a brand-new quarterback at Ohio State. How's that going to work against Michigan and Jim Harbaugh with Shea Patterson as a veteran quarterback in Ann Arbor?
Well, when I talked earlier about there are seven teams that are projected to be favored in every game, Michigan is one of those seven teams. They get Ohio State in Ann Arbor, in the non-conference schedule. They get Notre Dame at home. But the question is, can they finally beat Ohio State? Harbaugh's 0-4 against Ohio State. Obviously, Urban Meyer is no longer coaching there. Ryan Day takes over. I thought Ryan Day was very impressive last year in the first three games of the season when Meyer served the suspension for his handling of the Zach Smith situation. Offensively, you wonder if Michigan can finally get it going. The offense did improve last year with Shea Patterson. Defensively, you know they're going to be strong. The problem for Michigan and Harbaugh, it's been well documented. They're 0-6 when they're not favored, but good news is they're projected to be favored every game. But then they're 1-9, against top 10, top 15 competition. And so you figure Ohio State's going to be up there. The big question for Ohio State is, how's the transition with Justin Fields taking over at quarterback? They only have four returning starters on offense. They do return a ton defensively, nine starters back on defense. That's going to be the big question mark. Will they just continue to roll like they did with Urban Meyer through the Big Ten? I guess the good news, bad news for Ryan Day is the expectations will not change because he's a first year coach, because the expectations in Columbus are to win the Big Ten and get to the college football playoff. But certainly for Michigan, if Jim Harbaugh can't beat Ohio State this year, is he ever going to beat Ohio State? And I'm sure a lot of Michigan people are thinking that. By no means am I saying he's on the hot seat, but certainly, my gosh, if you can't do it this year, you get him in Ann Arbor. This looks to be a good situation for you. You've got a first-year coach. When will it ever happen?
Brett McMurphy, College Football Insider. You can go to watchstadium.com under the College Football tab. Get the very latest. All right, SEC Media Days next week in Birmingham. We know about Georgia. We know about Alabama. Who becomes Brett McMurphy? Who do we focus on next week as the number three team? You have Joe Burrow at LSU. You've got a new quarterback, maybe Bo Nix, the freshman at Auburn. You've got the battle that continues at Florida with Franks and Jones. And you have Kellen Mond at Texas A&M. Which team is going to emerge as that number three alternative that could upset the whole concept of a Georgia-Alabama rematch here in Atlanta?
Well, you pretty much nailed it. I mean, it gets down to who do you think is the third best team and who do you think is going to have the third best record, because I think LSU is the third best team. But, man, guys, their schedule is just so brutal. They've got Florida, Auburn, Texas A&M, and then they go at Alabama. And then in the non-conference, they go at Texas in week two. You mentioned Joe Burrow. What I'm fascinated to see is what happens with LSU's offense, because you look at what they did the last four games of last season. They averaged nearly 500 yards a game compared to about 360 yards in the first nine games. So did that mean they finally figured things out in the back half of the year, or was it a combination of easier competition, including the game against UCF in the Fiesta Bowl? I think it's probably a little bit of both. But last year, LSU's solid on defense every year. That's not going to change. Just that schedule's so hard. And, Coach O, I mean, give him credit. I don't think people realize in his two-plus years since taking over for Miles, he's coached Alabama in 34 games. 16 of those games were against ranked opponents. So it's never easy sledding at LSU. I think Texas A&M has a great opportunity with Kellen Mond. And certainly Florida, their schedule sets up. I mean, it's cupcake city. They play two FCS opponents. I think they're the only team in the country that plays two FCS opponents. Felipe Franks is back. Like you mentioned, Dan Mullen has done wonders with that offense. And they do have eight starters back on defense. So pick a name out of the hat, and you have as good a chance to pick who's going to be that number three team. If you ask me who's the third best team, I'm going to go with LSU. If you ask me when the dust has settled and which team has the best record, I'm probably going to go with Florida just because the schedule is so much easier or so much more manageable being in the East compared to the West, where you're going to battle Alabama, LSU, Texas A&M, et cetera.
That is Brett McMurphy, a college football expert, as we get ready for SEC Media Days next week in Birmingham. Well, final segment of the show on this Saturday says Hughes World is coming up.
Yes, well, I get to talk about some stuff. There's an iconic vehicle that's, they made the last one the other day, and it sold for a ton of money. I'm going to talk about that on the other side of Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We've got something to prove. That's not confidence. That's just wanting to prove it.
Training camp is about to begin.
Listen in as we give you exclusive coverage from Flowery Branch.
Our Falcons play here. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Do y'all understand that I played football 10 years in the NFL? So when I start talking like I'm talking, it's because I'm still in football mode, so back up off.
I don't understand it, bro.
No, but I'm saying that's what I'm saying. You gotta stay focused, man. That's all I'm saying.
Only from the mind of Hugh Douglas.
Yeah, last night, so when I was reading through, these little publications I like to read, I like to know what's going on with all the major vehicles that are, coming out next month, even though I'm not going to purchase any of them. I still like to, look at them and get a little bit excited about them. And last night I read that the last ever C7 Corvette was made, and it rolled off the assembly line, and it went to Bear Jackson, and it sold for $2.7 million. The last ever C7 Corvette that was made. The mid-engine C8 generation Corvette is on its way. So the last C7 rolled off the production line, and it sold for $2.7. All the proceeds will go to Steven Siller Tunnel to Towers Foundation, a charity founded to honor the memory of Steven Siller, a firefighter who lost his life in 9/11. The foundation focuses on helping injured military veterans and first responders through building homes and paying off mortgages.
$2.7 million.
Wow. And this is the thing. Like, the last C7 Corvette was that dog, too, John. It was a Z06 coupe. And it was called 3LZ trim, painted black, equipped with Z07 performance package.
So this
includes carbon ceramic brakes, a high downforce aero package, and Michelin Pilot Sport Cup 2 tires. The car shown in the image above is not the actual car. It's a stand-in. Man. But the real thing will be built sometime in the near future. So basically, they bought, they're rolling out. They're getting ready for the new model year of the new 2020 Corvette. And the reason why they did this, because, they have the generation, the C5. I think I had a C5, or was it a C6? I can't remember. But the C7 is the last one that they made with the front engine design. The new one that they're going to be rolling out pictures for next week is the C8. And they say it's going to be mid-engine. It's finally here, 2020 mid-engine design Corvette. And I got a chance to see some of the renders. Not of the actual car, what people think that it's going to look like. It looks like it's going to be a pretty good looking car. They've changed it up a lot, but it's funny because the Corvette is one of the cars that for older guys, that is the one that we call our midlife crisis car.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one that you get when you're going through the midlife crisis. But I was talking to Aid, the producer, in the bullpen a little bit, and the sports car, the American muscle sports car market is about to change drastically, John. Because the market for the two-door coupes is a lot softer than it has been in previous years. I think the accumulated sales for the, I think it was the Corvette, not the Corvette, but the Camaro, the Challenger, and the Mustang were probably I think they said in 2018 was like 600,000, maybe.
That doesn't sound like a whole lot.
That's not a whole lot. There's not a whole lot.
It's all trucks and SUVs.
It's all trucks and SUVs, and it's more of the four-door cars now. A lot of the coupes, because a lot of people are moving towards, like, people are getting cars now that makes more sense for them. And if you get more bang for your buck and get a car that has a little bit of horsepower, you're kind of going that route now.
This C8 that I'm looking at is, you know, the prototype. Am I wrong in thinking that it looks like a Lamborghini?
Well, with the mid-engine design, that's kind of what you're going for. You're talking about the Porsches and things like that.
Right.
It's just the weight distribution in the car is a lot different. I think that's what they're really shooting for when they go for the mid-engine design.
You know, isn't it interesting that you have, you know, cars like the Vette, which if you think about, you know, over the course of time, Hugh, back to like say the Vette of the '80s to this one. I mean, they have so changed and radically changed the body style and the look of the car, and yet it's still a Corvette.
Yeah, but I tell you what, the C7, to a lot of people, it harkened back to, I think it was the 67 Corvette, the way that it looked, the lines and everything. You can still see some of the traditional markings of the Corvette in the car, and they try to keep those, you know, they try to keep those intact. They did it in the Mustang a few years ago. I know that they had the Bullet Mustang that they harkened back to. I think it was the Steve McQueen. The car that he drove in Bullet, they had a Bullet Mustang, and they try to keep some of the same lines of the car. I was kind of surprised about the Dodge Challenger, and they were talking about that's probably going to end up going away because the Challenger sales were soft as well because everybody's starting to get the four-door cars, and it makes more sense to drive a four-door. If you're going to get that kind of horsepower, it just makes more sense. You can throw the kids in the back, and you can really use the back seat, so it kind of just makes more sense,
Next time you drive up to Ohio, I don't know if you ever been to Bowling Green, Kentucky?
No, I know the Corvette factory,
the museum.
Yeah, the Corvette, the museum as well, John. I was thinking about that a couple years ago. The museum had a sinkhole.
Right.
And a lot of those cars fell through, and I wonder if they got them fixed or whatever. But, yeah, I know, and if you want to, if you buy a Corvette, I do know this, that if you want to have one built, they'll give you the build number, and the day that your Corvette is rolling off the assembly line, you can actually go up there and watch it come off the assembly, like the last parts portion of it. Yeah, know all of that about them Corvettes. Yeah, all of that. But it's going to be pretty interesting because this last Z06 that's coming off the line, that's going to make a lot of people, when the new C8 comes out, a lot of people are going to be in line trying to get that new Corvette, especially with that mid-engine design.
What do you think that runs for? Just ballpark.
They said that the new body style is going to compete with the GT350 and basically be priced like a high-end Mustang. So I'm thinking probably about 44. It all depends because the Corvette is like anything. It's like buying a Porsche, anything else. You can really get a little pricey when you start getting up into the ones that got the bigger engine and stuff. But you could probably get like a stock Vette, maybe for like 30 or 40.
Really? I would have said, well, that's a $100,000 car. Well, but then again,
no, that ain't, it, like it if you want a Z06, then that's what you're working with. See, that if you can't afford it, because you don't want to get in a situation where you get something that you can't really afford. But if you can afford it, you want a Corvette that got a little bit of sting to it, a little bit of pop to it.
You know, I so bad want a truck, and I've been researching trucks over, Dodge, Ford, Chevy, even Nissan and Kia, looking at all the trucks, and I can't decide. I'm having a hard time kind of settling on one. You know, I mean, I like so many of them. I can't get one that's kind of.
Well, I think that you probably should look at what's the functionality for you in the truck. What means more to you about the truck? Is it the overall work that you're going to do in the truck, or is it the aesthetics?
See, I'm stuck between the two. That's my problem.
It's the aesthetics.
I like the ones that really look good, and I really want one that's going to work for me.
And then you got the functionality, because I know a lot of trucks, if you're talking about the back bed, some of them have where they open up like suicide doors.
Right.
Like in the back. It all depends on what you want to get.
Well, those new step-down doors are pretty nice.
Yeah,
that
too. It all depends. But yeah, that's it. The C8 is rolling out, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be a mid-engine design, so that's going to be pretty cool.
Andy and Randy coming up next. They are live at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw. And we'll be talking to those boys as they get ready for their run through this Saturday afternoon on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.